Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What activities and rites of passage from your own childhood do you want your children to experience? Like many American men, Brian D. Sweeney looks back with great fondness on the years he spent as a Boy Scout, learning about everything from wilderness survival to civic engagement until he earned the coveted rank of Eagle Scout. But given the official position of the Boy Scouts of America to shun gay scouts and newly revealed allegations that the organization let some abusive scoutmasters go unpunished in decades past, Sweeney has decided he does not want his own son to join the organization. Brian D. Sweeney is senior executive editor at Texas Monthly Magazine. His essay, Scouts' Dishonor, appears in the current issue. Brian, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
By the way, I do want to mention we extended an invitation to the Boy Scouts of America to send a representative to be in the studio today for this program, but did not receive a reply to that request. Brian, growing up in Plano, you spent 6 years as a Boy Scout. What did that experience offer you as a kid that you don't think you'd have gotten elsewhere?
Well, that's a great question. I think of the two things that were sort of most important to me growing up in Plano were being a member of the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts throughout my life and playing baseball throughout my life. And so when I as a young man, and so when I look back at those two experiences, that really defines my childhood. One of the things I didn't have really room to say in the essay was that I was also a member of Cub Scout Pack 291, which was a feeder into Boy Scout Troop 291. And so from an early age in elementary school, I was involved in this. And not only that, my family was involved in it. And so I think it was one of those experiences that you looked forward to because you were spending time with friends. You were doing things that you wouldn't have learned to have done otherwise. As I say in the piece, as you get older, you learn to make one-match fires with damp wood and, you know, go down zip lines and make, you know, life preservers out of blue jeans while you're floating in the water and you have to pull them off. But those are the sort of things that jump out at you as memories that you kind of talk about and laugh about years later. But it really is all adults who have been through something as a child and they look back at it, they realize the sort of leadership skills that you were taught that you didn't even know that you were learning. You look back at all of the experiences that you shared. And kind of most important, I think, sort of looking up to adult leaders who really were guiding you along the path. Did we get in trouble as Boy Scouts? You know, of course we did. We did a lot of dumb things. And what's good about that is that there were adult leaders there who would correct you in the ways that were appropriate and truly did help you learn to grow up.
So for years you had dreamed of recreating this experience if you were to have a son yourself. But when the time came, in recent months, you've had to reconsider that.
Well, certainly that was something that I had always assumed. I wanted my boy to do what I did. I want him to play baseball, and I want him to go to Boy Scouts and do all of those things and sort of enjoy those experiences that I had. It becomes a little bit of an academic exercise before you have children when you're seeing things happen in various organizations. You can take, for example, the discussion that we're having now over peewee and youth football as to whether or not football is a safe thing for young children to be doing in terms of that activity and sort of the repetitive stress and of taking that kind of punishment. And you can see where maybe people are changing their minds as to whether or not they think that's a good thing. When I became aware of the Boy Scouts taking this particular policy on its membership standards, it kind of caught me back. As a young person, certainly I was taught to think about sexuality in a certain way, but as I got older, my views certainly evolved on that topic. And I got to the point to where what I was hearing from the Boy Scouts, which is that they would not allow an openly gay member or an openly gay leader to serve in the troop, struck me as inconsistent with what I was thinking and kind of what I was learning as I was growing up. But it wasn't, of course, until I had a son that this became something that was very real to me in terms of the decision. Mm-hmm. So my son is 3 years old now. He's terrific. And as you think about all of the experiences that you want him to have, obviously that became something that my wife and I started to discuss. And when this ruling or this sort of issue came up again in mid-July, where after a two-year evaluation, the Boy Scouts affirmed their membership policy, it was one of those moments where I felt like I had to make a decision as a parent. And I'm just simply not comfortable at this point allowing my son in future years. Obviously, he's too young right now, but allowing my son to join an organization where I have a fundamental problem with how it's presenting itself.
So do you feel like letting your son or any child participate in Boy Scouts today, given the policy that was reaffirmed in July, is a sort of de facto endorsement of discrimination against gay people?
I think that that's a choice that every parent would have to make for himself and herself about their child. I hope one of the things that comes through in my essay, and certainly the ending note on the essay, is that I still have a profound love and respect for the Boy Scouts. I think, like a lot of organizations, there are certain aspects of it that need to evolve, and I think that that can happen. And I think that there are ways that it should change to keep... I think there's a way for it to continue to boast its traditional values, yet keep up with where people are in society thinking about these types of issues. So I would never say that as a blanket statement. I would say from my own point of view that to have my son enrolled, join a troop, would in a way, yes, give my sort of tacit approval to that. But let me also say, and this is one thing I hope that we can get into, is that given the vast array of troops all around the country and certainly within the state of Texas, each troop is run sort of on its own in a fairly independent way. And in my essay, I called the scoutmaster of my old troop, a man whom I had not met before, just to ask him sort of what he thought, because my experiences as a Boy Scout in Troop 291 were so uniformly good, I was wondering if that sort of spirit came through today. Part of that was that these issues never came up in scouting. I think that we talked about fairly weighty things in terms of giving back to the community and community service, really trying to be better and better as we grew up and more responsible and mature adults. But the issues of sexuality were never once raised in the same way, quite honestly, that issues of religion were never raised in our troop. And that was what I was hearing from the current scoutmaster. I think that's the right way to go. I don't know that sexuality needs to be or should be an issue with these kids. I think that's something that's handled privately. But my feeling is that even though individual troops are all going to have their own character based on the taste and interests of the leaders themselves, the national organization's rule is still the national organization's rule. And that's sort of where I began to disagree, and that's hopefully what is reflected in the essay.
We should point out here, as you do in the piece, that the Supreme Court has ruled the BSA is legally entirely within its rights as a private organization to reject gay members.
Absolutely, and I think that was very, very important for me to put in there. In fact, there are two. I'm obviously not a lawyer, but my understanding of the legal cases is that we have had two major cases within the past 15 years or so. Both had gone on for quite a long time throughout the court system. One had was in California. It's Curran versus Mount Diablo Council of the Boy Scouts of America. That began, I believe, in 1980, certainly in the early 80s. The original case may have been filed in 1981, about a Boy Scout named Tim Curran, who had just finished his rank, his requirements for Eagle Scout, and had later applied to be an assistant scoutmaster in that same troop, I think. And in the interim, he had joined a group, a gay and lesbian group, is my understanding. And there was a story in the newspaper, and this got back to local council leaders. And when that was discovered, he was not allowed to participate as an adult leader. That made its way all the way through the courts, and in 1998, the Supreme Court of California upheld the Boy Scouts decision. During that time, there was also a case, this is Boy Scouts of America versus Dale. The gentleman's name is James Dale from New Jersey. He was in a very similar situation. I think that he had completed his rank of Eagle and was wanting to come back as an adult leader. In that sense, I think that he had joined a gay and lesbian group on his college campus. That news later then came out, and he was not allowed to serve as an adult leader. In that instance, there was a decision in 2000 by the Supreme Court of the United States also upholding it. And essentially what it was saying is that as a private organization, the Boy Scouts have the right to exclude a person from membership when, quote, the presence of that person affects in a significant way the group's ability to advocate public or private viewpoints. And it was very important for me in the story to make that case, that the Boy Scouts are on absolutely solid legal ground here, and continue to be. They have revised their statements related to the membership policy over the years, and it remains generally consistent with this. But I also think that there is a sense, particularly among individuals of my generation, where our views on homosexuality and gay rights are changing. And as such, it makes it hard that even if the Boy Scouts are on strong legal footing, there's a larger question to ask as to whether or not this is the right thing to do.
What did you learn, Brian, about the justification the Boy Scouts of America gives for prohibiting the inclusion of gay scouts?
Right, right. Well, that's a good question. One of the things that you would say at the beginning of every meeting, as we'd bring our meetings to order, is the Boy Scout oath. And we would also say the Boy Scout promise. And in that, we would refer to certain things to keep ourselves morally straight and to keep ourselves clean in word and deed. In 1991, the Boy Scouts, as the Curran case was making its way through, had released a position statement on its membership policy. I don't know that this was the first official membership policy. It had been in place before. I know that there were cases of people being removed in the 80s. But in 1991, it issued an official statement on the policy, and it said, "We believe that homosexual conduct is inconsistent with the requirements in the Scout Oath that a Scout be morally straight, and in the Scout Law that a Scout be clean in word and deed, and that homosexuals do not provide a desirable role model for Scouts." Now, that would have come out when I was in college, after I had left Scouting. And I should say that I've not had much of an attachment to Scouting over the years, in part because I don't have a son. I didn't have a son, and the schedules are very, very busy. Looking back on it right now, when I think of all of the leaders that were helping in our troop, you, as kids, you certainly take them for granted, and you sort of think like your public school teachers. Well, of course they're going to be there. Where else would they be on a Monday night but spend time with 30 loud right. kids who don't want to pay any attention to what we're doing? But in fact, you come to realize how valuable that is, and so as part of that, their leadership provides for you. And so as part of this, we would say the oath and the law, and we would talk very specifically about what those things mean. But in my experience, there was never any talk that being morally straight was equivalent in any way to sort of sexual orientation or behavior. It simply never came up. And I think that was when I first began to be aware that this was just not something that I had considered. Certainly as I got older and was more mature and began to have a family, these issues began to hit home. And I was disappointed in July when the statement came back out. The Boy Scouts had initiated a 2-year review of the membership policy. They were clearly a little bit anxious about it because a month before, on June 7th, they had issued almost sort of a preemptive press release that said, contrary to media reports, the Boy Scouts of America has no plans to change its membership policy. And then that followed up the following month with the affirmation of it.
Mm-hmm. Is there any indication that the Boy Scouts are sort of ferreting out people who may be closeted and gay or not have made that sort of part of their lives publicly as Scouts?
That's an excellent question. And most of the statements, or I should say in all of the statements that I have read, which is not to suggest that I've done kind of a complete and exhaustive review of it, the Scouts make a point of saying that they do not actively seek to find out if people within the organization are gay. Mm-hmm. And that there's no sort of membership requirement, there's nothing that you affirm. It's that if it comes to be revealed, as I say, in the case of Curran or James Dale, I think there were issues in newspapers where they had joined these particular groups. My feeling, again, is just that I'm not going to say that it's strictly a generational divide. The issue is certainly not that simple. And I know there are people of my age and generation and younger who completely support and agree with this policy and disagree with me. And they say, let the Boy Scouts be the Boy Scouts and have their own membership standards. And I think that's a very powerful argument. It's a reasonable argument. But my feeling is just that for the Boy Scouts to kind of continue to be important and to be relevant, I think that they want to update themselves with how society views things. And there's no question that since certainly in the last 30 years, we have become a far more tolerant and I think a far more thoughtful society. And so if there are other youth organizations that don't have a membership requirement like this, the Girl Scouts...
Got to jump in for a break here. Brian D. Yeah. Sweeney is with us from Texas Monthly. His essay, Scouts Dishonor, appears in the current issue.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Investing in your education can pay big dividends. SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning could help. You can earn a CFP certificate at SMU starting in January. Details online at cfp.smu.edu.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Brian D. Sweeney. He is senior executive editor at Texas Monthly Magazine and author of the essay Scouts Dishonor, which appears in the current issue of the magazine. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Brian, in addition to the issue of the Boy Scouts' ongoing rejection of gay members, there are the unrelated but very disturbing allegations of how the organization handled past episodes of alleged sexual abuse of scouts by some scout leaders. Can you just give us an overview of the ongoing investigations into this?
Yes, and I think you're right to say that these are two issues that it hits kind of concurrently. They are unrelated, but the issue of abuse allegations that were either kind of covered up or ignored completely are very troubling. Some quick background to the case. There was a case out in Oregon of a former Boy Scout who had sued a leader on allegations of abuse and later received a large judgment from the Boy Scouts as a result of that. And as part of that case, there were files that were released into evidence that the Boy Scouts had been keeping way back as far as 1919, I believe, that were known as the ineligible volunteer file. And they were files that were kept on leaders who had done things that would make them not fit to serve as leaders, and sort of all sorts of transgressions. Those transgressions that related to the sexual abuse of children were sort of dubbed the perversion files. And this court case had requested those files that had gone roughly from the sort of overlapping years, but roughly from the years of 1970 to 1991. Various news organizations, including the LA Times, had done a review of about 1,600 of those files during that time. And they found that, as you might expect of a large national organization that of this particular type, that many of the allegations of abuse were handled in the way that they should have been. Many were reported directly to the police department, and then when that information came back to the Boy Scouts used those to update their files as to who was not fit, obviously, to work with children, a danger to children. What was revealed, unfortunately, in cases across the country was that of those 1,600 files, there were about 500 files or cases where the scouts learned about alleged abuse directly, either from boys or parents or from other staff members. In those 500 cases, 400 of them, there were no indication that the allegations were ever reported to the authorities. And even worse, there were 100 or so cases where it was clear that the Boy Scouts had allowed the person in question who had been accused of abuse to either resign quietly or even to sort of hide the allegations. And I think that this is a terrible, terrible thing. I think it's very important to say that at least from the legal proceedings, we're talking about files up until roughly the year 1991, which would have covered the time that I was a scout. I think the Boy Scouts would say today they have a new chief scout executive, and his name is Wayne Brock, and he's issued a vigorous statement in September saying that the Boy Scouts are one of the safest organizations that families can put their faith in terms of having their boys be in units, in Cub Scout units and Boy Scout units. But certainly in this earlier time, there's sort of very, very difficult questions that need to be asked. The Boy Scouts, though, have also had, or they have been accused of being a little bit slow to update their standards. The standards now are very, very rigorous. All people who want to serve as a volunteer have to undergo a criminal background check. In the state of Texas, you have to go through two levels of youth protection training. That was not always the case, but it is now. Very recently now, any allegations of abuse have to be directly reported. That was not always the case. But some of the problems that people are having with scouting is that scouting, for example, did not require criminal background checks for all of its volunteers until 2008, and that there were times in the mid-80s when groups like Big Brothers and Big Sisters were ordering checks for all of their volunteers. Some scouting officials actually argued that those policies would cost too much, and they may scare away potential volunteers. And in some cases, they were able to lobby to remove legislation that would have mandated things like FBI fingerprinting. I think that whenever you're dealing with a youth organization, you think of the public schools and you think of other organizations, there's always that sort of unfortunate fear that there will be predators lurking. And that is a terrible, terrible thing. But there's also that other layer that is the organization itself doing everything that it possibly can do to make sure that either those people are caught and sent to justice or stopped in the first place. And that's where this debate has really flared up, is that during that period of time, were the Boy Scouts interested enough in the protection of the children, or were there cases that they were more interested in protecting the reputation of the organization or the individuals involved?
So, Brian, assuming that, as you mentioned, really rigorous policies have been put in place to make sure that boys are safe, that improprieties are reported immediately, that children are protected, is it going too far to infer that perhaps the organization assumes that excluding gay scout leaders and scouts somehow is related to this, given that many of the pedophilia incidents reported were adult men having been accused of abusing boys? And I want to take pains here to say that I do not assume for a moment that the fact that one is gay makes one any more likely than anyone in the general population to abuse a child. But I'm wondering if you feel as if that is the implication of the Boy Scout policies.
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are obvious. One, as you had just said, that there's absolutely no indication of that, and I think most reasonable people believe that without thinking about it twice. I think, unfortunately, there was for a very long time an ignorant link between pedophilia and homosexuality, which, again, I think most reasonable people don't even think about twice. I can't answer that question. I think that I can say that if you're linking the notion of what it means to be morally straight and that you believe that a person, and I'm saying this from the organization standpoint, that if you believe that a person who is gay is then absolutely by default morally straight, I don't think that it's an unfair case to say that you would go down the path that is a possibility. I don't know that that's the direct correlation. I had also put in a request to visit with the Boy Scouts. In particular, I wanted to speak to its chief executive, Wayne Brock, and that did not happen, unfortunately. That's a question that I would have loved to have asked him. But I think that it is, the problem I think that many people are wrestling with is that are we at an age now in 2012 where most people believe that to be morally straight means that you have to be, you cannot be gay. And I think there's a growing number, as public opinion polling suggests, that people simply just do not believe that that's true. There are certainly a lot of other things that would disqualify one from leading a scout troop. I don't think that orientation is one of them by any stretch.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll go to the phones now. And first on the line, we have Dick in Plano. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Chris.
Hi,
hey, enjoying your commentary and speaking with the guests. I guess my comment, or maybe it's a question, is it appears that the guest's conception of morality has changed, but not the Boy Scouts as an organization, nor probably their biggest sponsors, which are religious institutions and churches, which hold a certain level of morality, and that excludes homosexuality.
I think that's true, and what I would say to that is that you're right that I believe the majority of troops are what are known chartered by churches of various faiths. For example, the Mormon Church is a primary sponsor of Boy Scout troops. I can speak only specifically to my experiences in the troop in Plano that I grew up in. Troop 291 is the it's the oldest continuously chartered troop by the same organization. It was chartered in 1965 by the First United Methodist Church in Plano. Back then it was on 18th Street, just a couple of blocks down from where I lived. We had no members of our troop who belonged to that congregation at the time that I was on there. I was raised Church of Christ. My two best friends, one was raised Catholic, one was raised Baptist. And those issues never came up. We never sort of talked about religion or God in an overt way. And my sense is that there was not any kind of communication in that way between the adult leaders and the church itself. I have no doubt that there are troops that are far more closely affiliated with the churches, that which is to say that the youth members of individual congregations make up a lion's share of the members of that individual troop. But I think that what my experience shows, and certainly in talking to the current Scoutmaster shows, is that there is a way forward in those situations where those types of issues can be muted, that they do not play as large of a role, and issues related to sort of very specific questions of morality and religion are probably best left to the families themselves or the churches themselves, that the Boy Scouts do not have to be sort of overtly in line with whatever those particular teachings are. And certainly we should point out that there are a lot of congregations who don't believe this anymore, who take a far more open approach to membership.
This does not come up in your piece, but we've had a number of emails asking that we discuss the fact that, according to these emails, that atheists are discriminated against by the Boy Scouts of America. Can you tell me what you know about that and what the policy is?
I think that's another very good question. I did not go into this very much in the article. I mean, there are in the Boy Scout oath, you say that I will do my best to do my duty to God and my country. There is also at the back part of the Scout law, a Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent as the final one there. The Boy Scouts, in my opinion, sort of in my research with this, have taken a pretty wide view as to what it means to be reverent and what it means to do your duty to God. It's non-denominational, and in fact, not only is it non-denominational, it's not specific to the Protestant religion or the Jewish religion or any other religions, but there is this expectation that the boys and the leaders would be reverent. It is true that members have been kicked out for being atheists, and I think that's a slightly different issue, but it's an interesting one to explore, because I think if you're coming from it from my standpoint, you would say that homosexuality is not a choice. It's not a lifestyle. It's who you are, and it's part of who you are. Whereas I think choosing to be an atheist is a decision that one makes, either from a family standpoint or from an individual standpoint. But that is something that the Boy Scouts have been criticized for over the years in this particular aspect of its membership policy. Again, I have to go back just to my specific experiences. It never came up. I mean, we never talked about it. The most overt thing that I can remember us doing at the end of our meetings, we would all get together what we would call circle up. We would all stand together in a big circle in the gym of the First United Methodist Church, right arm over the left arm, and we would hold hands, and we would say, "And now may the great Scout Master of all Scouts be with us till we meet again." Boom. The meeting was over, and then we would take off, and we would play basketball or whatever before our parents would pick us up or it was time to go. Now, I don't mean to marginalize that sort of notion of faith was just completely glossed over, but it was just never, in my experience, talked about in an overt way as if it was a condition of membership or something that we really focused on in great detail. I think that's better left to the parents, or it's better left to the church itself.
Can you talk a little bit, Brian, about the responses that you've had so far at Texas Monthly from people who've read this piece and reacted to it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you always, when you write a story like this, you're obviously hoping to hear. This was a difficult story for me to write because I'm not a personal essayist, and I think the most personal thing that you can possibly do in a story is to bring your children into it in a serious way, and that was something that I had to really think about whether I was comfortable doing it and whether I thought it was appropriate to do. In no way did I want my family situation to be looked like as a prop so that I could write a particular column. So what I ended up doing was writing this from a very honest standpoint. Now, in that sense, if I have my say, I think it's exactly right for the people who read it to have their say. And we have had a ton of responses. In fact, my editor had told me that it's the most sort of responses that we've had coming over our formal channels of any story in the December issue. Most of those have been negative. Most of them have disagreed with me very, very strongly in saying that the Boy Scouts are standing up for traditional values, and that's a good thing in a world where they feel that traditional values are slipping away, and that I'm essentially selling out the organization, that I felt like I took the best of it away, and now I'm saying that I'm not going to allow my son to join. It's been interesting on social media. It's been almost the exact opposite. It's run completely a different way. Hmm. And again, that may suggest the generational aspects of this, that perhaps an older generation still feels very tied to this, and that maybe a younger generation doesn't. Certainly doesn't feel as strongly. And again, as I say, my own views on this have evolved just as through my own experiences. And so it's good to have the conversation going, but it always, it never feels good for people to try to kind of take you apart or make kind of personal attacks on a decision that you have made. But I understand that you want people to read it and to have that exchange of ideas.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Paul in Dallas. Hello, Paul.
Hello. How you doing?
Great. Thank you.
I guess my question was, I've worked around youth a lot, primarily boys and girls, and something that we're having to constantly monitor, even, inside church youth groups or whatever, is sexual activity between the boys and the girls. I guess my question for the speaker was, how do you think that they would be able to address, or, there's a lot of camping involved with the Scouts, and so
absolutely, all right.
How do you think that they would deal with these boys having sexual activity together during these campouts and stuff like that? It's just something to think about, I think.
What do you think, Brian?
Well, I imagine that would be a possibility if that were the case. Obviously, that would be about as inappropriate as anything that I could possibly imagine. I think that the chances of that happening are fairly slim. And remember, what we're talking about here, too, Chris, you had asked me at the beginning of the show, sort of as a parent, if you enroll your son, have your son join scouting, are you making that tacit endorsement? But because of course, at the age that kids are joining the Scouts, whether they were Cub Scouts or they come to scouting, they're far too young to understand sort of any of this. Sexuality is not an issue. And even as you grow up, obviously, as we all know, 15, 16, 17 is an unbelievably confusing time as you're beginning to sort of understand these things. I can't imagine that would be an issue, but as the caller says, as he raises that issue, obviously that would be wildly, wildly unacceptable. And when I spoke to the current scoutmaster of Troop 291, he had told me that this was not anything that he had encountered in his little, corner of scouting, but that, you do have cases where some of the older boys are talking inappropriately about sex and the younger boys are hearing. And that's also something that you make clear that's not appropriate. I think those things get handled on a case-by-case basis. I think the problem, of course, is just the notion of a membership policy that says, if you are X, then you cannot join. And I quite frankly can't think of any other sort of thing that we would ever say, that of all the things that kids do, they get in trouble, they maybe struggle in school, they might get in,
Gotta jump in once again to take a break. Brian Sweeney is with us from Texas Monthly Magazine. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Investing in your education can pay big dividends. SMU Certificate Program and Financial Planning could help. You can earn a CFP certificate at SMU starting in January. Details online at cfp.smu.edu.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Brian D. Sweeney, who is Senior Executive Editor at Texas Monthly Magazine. His essay, Scouts Dishonor, appears in the current issue. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Jim on the line in Louisville. Hello, Jim.
Hi. Yes, I hear you say that you think the scouting organization has done a lot of things to fix the problems, and it has. I've been in scouting for over 30 years, and so I know that's the truth. It is a very safe place overall for boys. But I don't understand why you would not allow your son to have the same good scouting experience that you had. There's nothing that your son could not enjoy or experience in scouting that you experienced. It's the same organization, the same skills, and the same merit badges, and only a few more things have been updated. But I hear you talk a lot about policy, overall scout policy, and policy makers, but you don't seem to have a feel for where the rubber meets the road, and that is at the troop level. I don't see discrimination like that you're talking about. I don't say that it doesn't exist because I read the papers too, but that's far, far and away the exception to have a boy turned away because he's X, or he's this, or he's that. I've had boys in my troop from all ethnicities, and I'm sure I've had homosexuals in my troop, but frankly, it's not an issue. It doesn't belong in scouting.
What do you think about that, Brian?
I think that's an excellent point, and I think that really does get to the heart of the matter. I think the first question is that, and I hope, again, that this comes through in the piece, is that I have tremendous sadness making the suggestion that my son may not be able to join the Boy Scouts. But my feeling is that because the Scouts have been so insistent on this policy, that for me to enroll him in something in this way gives my tacit approval to the membership policy, which I don't agree with. Your fact saying that it's not an issue, I think, in fact, that is something that we've been talking about, was that these issues never came up in my personal scouting experience. They have never come up in the scouting experience of the gentleman who is now running my old troop. And again, I can only speak for my own troop. I mean, we're sort of talking about now over the years, we have somewhere along the lines of 909,000 Boy Scouts across the country. But the fact to me is that it's not an issue. There's no reason for the Boy Scouts to be making this issue. And so, because, as you say, these cases, many, I have no doubt that there are boys who have gone through the system and who are gay, and it never once raised an issue. Timothy Curran, the gentleman that we had talked about earlier in the hour from California, his scoutmaster did know that he was gay, and it was only until the council members had discovered this that they made the ruling that he was ineligible to serve. And so I think that's the reason why, that I feel like if I do it, I'm giving my tacit approval, and I think that the Boy Scouts will hopefully come to a point where they realize this is the wrong line in the sand to draw, and that ultimately I feel like it's going to put them on the wrong side of history.
Now, I realize that they are separate organizations, but what did you learn about how the Girl Scouts handle questions of sexual orientation?
Well, that's another good question. I don't have as much of a window on Girl Scouting, other than to say that there are no membership requirements along this line as with other major groups like the Boys and Girls Club or 4-H or things like that. I think in terms of looking ahead with these particular organizations, there's one thing that is worth noting. And as I say in the piece, in 2004, the person who is scheduled to become the new national president is Randall Stevenson, who is the CEO and president of Dallas-based AT&T. He was one of two people on the current board, the other one was the CEO of Ernst & Young, who spoke out disagreeing with the membership policy when it was released in July. And when he becomes president, his implication has been that this is something that he wants to take up because he thinks it's a false step for scouting. So I think that there may be a case where not only is this conversation going to continue, but it will change. And as I say, as I write, you know, I feel like now more than ever, the country needs the best that the Boy Scouts have to offer. But I feel that right now we're not offering the best of the Boy Scouts to the world. That there is a way for us to solve this issue, and the way to solve this issue is to be far more welcoming and to take the case that those people who don't belong in scouting are those people who do other types of things that violate the scout law and the scout oath.
I wonder if executives with the Boy Scouts of America have paid attention to the sort of now openness of the U.S. military to gay right. and lesbian members, because there was a lot of hand-wringing before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was dropped, and even before that time, that if the military were open to openly gay people, that there would be all kinds of problems. And my understanding is, and I haven't studied this very much in depth, but the articles that I have read have said it's sort of been like business as usual.
That's been my understanding as well, and I do point to that as one example in my piece. Essentially, what the Boy Scouts have right now is Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They're not actively looking for people. It's not a question, you know, it's not a box that you check on the questionnaire. But essentially, that's what we have. And the caller is right. I mean, I think the cases that we see this are very, very few and far between. And I have no doubt that that's the case. But I do think that it's the national organization that is insisting on making this an issue as opposed to me or, you know, people who are uncomfortable with this. I think that our society is changing, and some people believe that those changes are not for the better. But we are a far more inclusive society when it comes to issues of gender, issues of race, and issues of sexual orientation. And in my mind, that's what I was taught in Boy Scouts, was a level of tolerance and a level to sort of take people for what they do and sort of let their actions speak for them. I think that's the way that you judge who is and isn't fit to serve. And, you know, I've also done a lot with youth organizations. I've coached youth baseball and soccer teams, and I've been involved with communities and schools and children's advocacy centers. And I think you know when you have people who are genuinely interested in children and helping them and spending that time. And I think those are the people that you want associated with your group because you believe that they're going to have the best interest of children at heart. I don't think that this is the issue that would disqualify people from making a substantive contribution to young people.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Jim on the line in Dallas. Hello, Jim.
Hi, dear. Thank you very much. As I grew up in Boy Scouts in the late 50s, early 60s, we had a guy who was openly, flamboyantly gay. And we all loved him. He was a good friend to everybody. I think it was just one of the most inconsequential things that he was gay as far as our friendships were concerned. And I think that's the issue with Boy Scouts, period. It's a great organization for getting a kid out into the world. And they should accept all kids, all boys, boys who are gay, boys who aren't, boys who don't have fathers. Whatever, you know, it's just a way to get kids into the world. And on the other hand, and also on this issue of sexuality, I'd like to also bring this up. Boys who are 11 to 12 years old are suddenly lit up sexually, and they don't talk about it with adults. They just are as confused as ever about what is happening to them, and they just keep it between themselves and their friends.
Brian, what do you think about all that?
Well, I think that sounds right. I think you judge the person on what they do and how they behave, not on the, sort of the issue of orientation, to say that because you are this, then you cannot serve. I think that, and certainly what we have seen with these cases of abuse, which are sort of heartbreaking and terrible, but unfortunately we know that wherever there are children, there will be predators.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly know from the profiles that this was not the thing to be looking for, that you're talking about sick individuals where orientation was not the fundamental issue. And I don't think that, goodness, I just don't think that would be a surprise to anybody. I guess if somebody were to ask me, would I would be comfortable with a gay leader in a troop that my son was affiliated with? The question is absolutely yes, assuming that gay leader had the best intentions in heart for the boys and was, you know, good to them and a good leader. And I think that that's where this issue happens. Will it begin to change? I don't know. Does it seem to me to be a pretty bold stand that Randall Stephenson has taken, knowing that he's going to be the incoming national president in 2014? Yes. One of my very good friends and colleagues, Karen Blumenthal, who's a Dallas-based writer for the Wall Street Journal and has been writing a business column for us, just recently did a mini profile of him in an upcoming issue. And this subject came up kind of by the by. And one of the things that he said is that it is very likely now that AT&T will begin to hold its corporate donations to the Boy Scouts until this policy changes, because he felt that the Boy Scouts should be held to the same standard that the other clients and vendors that AT&T does business with are met. I think that's a very powerful message. And if that's the case, I think that you're going to see that this conversation is going to continue.
We have an email here from Katie in Minneapolis who writes, "My husband is an Eagle Scout, and we too have struggled with this and have come to the conclusion that we cannot do anything as a family that tacitly supports the Boy Scouts. It's been painful, but any organization that has worked so hard to exclude a group of people is not one we can be a part of. Exclusion and hate are not values for our family." You know, when I read that email, Brian, I hear a lot of pain in Katie's response, and I wonder if for you it feels like a sacrifice to make this decision on behalf of your son, who is now not yet even in school, but who could potentially be a Cub Scout in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there is already in my mind, if this continues to be the case, that as his dad, I'm making this decision because I think in the long run it sends the right message. There is already a loss of innocence for him not having the opportunity to join, that he's not going to have those same experiences. That doesn't mean that we can't replicate them, that we won't go camping together. Obviously we will. And that he won't do, you know, service projects with other organizations, churches and schools and things like that. But it's very heartbreaking. I think the only thing that I would say and that I would want readers or the listeners here to take away is that I have an enormous pride in my experiences of being a Boy Scout. I'm very proud of the work that my family had done with the Boy Scouts, my father, my older brother who served as Scoutmaster of my troop for a time. So it's very difficult to be in this situation. And I'm trying, in fact, to support the Boy Scouts by making this particular statement, as ironic as that might sound, that here you have a former member who's very interested in what scouting does and believes in the mission, but here is a place where scouting as a national organization has taken a false step. They had an opportunity to rectify the situation. I think they had an opportunity to move forward and to begin to leave some of this behind, and I think that they've missed it. I hope that they'll come back to it. The same way with the abuse allegations. The very best thing that they can do, I think, is what Mr. Brock has said that they're going to do. They're now going to look at all of the files, all of those files that have been kept under lock and key at the national headquarters in Irving for all of these years, and they're going to see, are there cases where they missed something, either by accident or overtly. There was, in fact, just a ruling that had come down from the Court of Appeals here in Texas that allowed the Scouts to keep files from 1985 to 2011 private. They had been requested by another former Scout who was going to file a case against scouting. I've always thought that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and if this is a dark chapter in the history of scouting, I think the best thing that the current leadership can do is to acknowledge it, to do everything that they can, as I think that they have tried to strengthen their safety requirements and their youth protection, but also to go back through and make sure that nothing has been missed. I think that's the best way to gain the confidence of future scouts and future scouting families, and also show that it's on the right path moving forward.
Let me ask you this, Brian. Sometime within the past year, we had on this show Zach Walls, who spoke out on YouTube very eloquently about his two lesbian mothers.
Right.
And he has remained supportive of the Boy Scouts despite the policy, and said essentially that the best way to change an organization that you love and care about is from within. What do you think about that perspective?
I think that's a very legitimate perspective, and I think that that's what I'm having to balance with this. Do I feel like if I join a terrific troop like Troop 291 in Plano and realize that this is probably not going to be an issue, is that a good thing? And I think, yes, that it is. But I think the overlying problem for me is that I'm still subject to what the national organization is saying. I had a friend up in Dallas whose son recently earned the rank of Eagle, and they were saying that to some of our friends, we feel like we have to explain our commitment to the Boy Scouts, that given all of the headlines that they're reading, that we feel like we almost have to make the case for why we still believe in scouting. And that's the real struggle here. I think so much of what scouting does is such a wonderful thing. The leadership training, but the fun, the scouting has always had this issue that you do incredibly cool things, but by your peers, it's often you're not thought of as cool for being a Boy Scout.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back on it, it was a tremendous, tremendous experience. There's no reason why that can't be the case. But I do think that this is a place where I would like to see the Boy Scouts evolve in their thinking. And I think that was the point of this particular essay, was to say that there is a cost to these things, and it's a cost not just to the organization, but it's a cost that the family makes. And it's something that, will be disappointment to my son and disappointment to me that he won't be able to do it through
Brian,
decision.
I'm afraid we're out of time here. Brian D. Sweeney's essay in the current Texas Monthly is called Scouts Dishonor. Brian, it's been a great discussion. Thank you so much for being with us.
Chris, thank you, and thank you to your listeners.
Today's show was engineered by Alan Roberts. We had Lindsay Connect on the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is our senior producer. We always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think is sponsored in part by the Horchow family, celebrating the vast array of ideas heard each day on KERA.